Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Do you know what today is?
I am Glenn the Geek from Lexington, Kentucky, a very tired Glenn the Geek from Lexington, Kentucky.
And I am Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Tuesday, June 7th, 2011, episode 157, sponsored by Pfizer Animal Health. Good morning, Horse World.
Do you know what today is?
No, what?
Yeah!
What day is it? Tell me!
It's Tuesday!
I can't believe it. I just don't believe it.
Feels like Tuesday. Tuesday has no feel. Monday has a feel. Friday has a feel. Sunday has a feel.
I feel Tuesday and Wednesday.
All right, shut up, the both of you.
Good morning, Jamie. I don't know about you, but I'm pooped. You guys kept me out past my bedtime last night.
Yeah, last night was an amazing experience, Glenn. What, you know, to be able to do the Horse World Gives Back Radiothon and to talk to the people we talk to and to hear their stories and how they're rebuilding. And it just, the entire thing was incredibly emotional and draining. So we are here today, the morning after, but it feels like a big hangover. And not to mention Skype, how we usually do our show, is down. So we're both on the phone.
Yeah, we have to actually hold the phones to our ears for an hour and a half to do the show today. This should be fun. You know what? We're here anyway because we're dedicated to our listeners. We have the best listeners in the world. We're going to talk about that here in a little bit because boy, did they come through for us last night. But let's go to Jennifer, find out what's going to be on today's show because I know, you know, we have to give kudos to Jennifer. She had more calls on the line than I think I have ever seen ever doing our live shows.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Oh, is it my turn?
Yes, it's your turn.
Oh, that was me. Okay. Oh, I'm sleepy, too. Although I wasn't out quite as late as you are, Glenn. On today's show, we start out with our regular Mucho Macho Man pre-race update from co-owner Patty Reeves. There's been a lot going on over there at the M3 camp, so don't miss this one. Lots going on. And then we follow up with a bit of anthropology. Yep, it's Science Weenie time at the Horses in the Morning show with Dr. Tamara Scoggins, and she's going to be talking about racing in Tibet, but she's an anthropologist, so we're going to be coming at it from a little bit of a different angle this time around. And as if that wasn't enough, we round out the show with Horse and Country TV's Katie Gilmore with her always fascinating Across the Pond report.
Well, I do have a daily Weenie for today. My daily Weenie goes out to all of our listeners, Jamie. You know, the Horses in the Morning listeners really came through last night, all of our listeners from the Horse Radio Network and new people. But, you know, our Horses in the Morning gang all were posting that they made donations, and thank you to all of you. I know some of you just got new jobs and you donated anyway. You know, how terrific is that?
It's fantastic. And what's really cool is that we found out that two of our listeners just got new jobs. So that's great in this market and this economy to hear that they're doing well and then they give back. I mean, it's just phenomenal.
Yes, and I thank you. You did a great job last night. I got to commend you. You held it together very well for you. You're usually an emotional mess. And I really predicted that by the end of last night's 3 hours, you would be sitting in a pile of goo on the floor. But you held up.
Well, I had tissues next to me and would quietly dab at my eyes and my runny nose. But, you know, it's not about me, and it's not about my tears. It's about these people that went through this horrible thing, and I think that's part of our responsibility as a host and a vehicle of letting these people talk about their stories. Is it's not my job to be a puddle. My job is to be a vehicle. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I got to tell you, I thought that when I was done last night, actually, I did pretty well the whole way through the show, because I was really concentrating also on the technical side of things. But when I got in the car to come home is when I kind of lost it last night. You know, I think that just every, you know, the last 2 weeks and putting this all together and it was done and it went very well and everybody stepped up that was on the show last night. That's when it all drained out of me last night. But I got to tell you that I think that this gave, we were wondering if the people who had losses and that were on the air last night telling some of their stories that were horrific in cases, if they would be willing to do that or able to do that. And what we found is I think they needed to do that. They needed a place to tell the world what their story was.
Absolutely. I think it was very cathartic for a lot of people. And you know, you said you cried on the way home. I just started drinking because I was already home. That's how I handled it. I was like, it's time for a beer. Show's over. So it was definitely an emotional experience, but one that I'm really glad I had, and because I really feel like if we can do anything to help, you know, we did, so.
Well, let's remind everybody that I am putting the podcast version of that show together now. By later this morning, it will be available. I'm going to put it on the Horse World Gives Back website, and I'm going to put it on Horses in the Morning site, so it'll go out in our feed too. So if you missed it last night, you can listen to it. It is well worth a listen. Have your tissues handy, but it is definitely well worth a listen. And I want to remind everybody that today is Horse World Gives Back Retail Day. They can go shopping.
Oh, shopping.
There's about 50 retailers there, and I think Jennifer was looking around this morning to see what she could find, too. There's about 50 retailers on our website, horsefoldgivesback.com. Go to the Retail Day page, and you'll find all of the retailers that are participating. There's 50 of them. You know, how cool is that, too? And you can go buy stuff at their stores today, and they will give 5% back to Horse World Gives Back and to the people who really need it. So, you know what? You were going to go shopping sometime this month for something for your horse or for your friends or a gift or whatever. You might as well do it today. And I know, Jamie, what are you looking at buying? You were looking at buying something.
there's several things. I think I'm gonna visit a bunch of the different retailers. You know, I told you my husband was out of town, and I was trying to kind of figure a way to get back at him.
Which means you're shopping.
Yeah, so I was going to go ahead and get a new chicken or something to put in the backyard, a new animal. But what I think I'm going to do is just do some retail therapy. And there's a couple things at Bit of Britain that I want. There's a couple websites on there that have such cute stuff that I'm figuring I could find something for somebody. You know?
There's some websites on there I had never heard of before, you know, that have some really neat stuff.
I had no
oh, really?
Idea. There's one in Scottsdale, Arizona. I'm like, I've never heard of that before. And they have some cute stuff, so I'm definitely going to shop there.
I know Helena emailed me this morning that she was going to be shopping for a fly sheet today, so she was comparison shopping and checking around for a fly sheet today. So she was doing that. And then Jennifer, I don't know. See, Jennifer's kept it. She's sneaky. She's kept it really quiet, but I know damn well she's been in that office looking through these websites. You know, she won't say anything. And then all of a sudden this afternoon she'll say, you know, I needed that thing for Beaker. So it's the retail day, so I thought I'd buy it today. I'll hear about it later.
That's why they created the clear browsing history button.
Well done, my friend. Well done. Hey, if anybody is in needing some riding boots, definitely go by the Ariat the launch. They have the all-black ones. You don't have to get the ones with the stripes on them. Those are the best riding boots I've ever worn. They're comfortable like tennis shoes. They are definitely go get them. So if you're going to buy boots today, go get those today and give money back. You know, I think they're well worth the purchase. Anything that you shop, you know, you just say it's for charity, and then you're happy about it. So don't worry about it. Glenn,
and that's
I have
how you can get away with it with your husband too. That's
exactly, it's yeah. charity, baby. It's charity.
So it works like this. When you have to have ice cream for dinner because you broke up with your boyfriend, the calories don't count. There's a null and void system involved. So when you shop in order to donate to charity, it does not have a negative effect on the horse budget. It doesn't count.
No.
Is that how it works?
It's not part of the horse budget at all.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Yeah.
All right, this is for you, Jamie.
You know, some really cool stories are coming out of what we did last night, and then I read this morning on Eventing Nation, and, you know, it's just another one of those squishy moments that you just get proud to be a horse person. A lot of what we talked about last night, we had some people on about Boyd Martin's barn fire last night, but this is from Eventing Nation. It says, a few weeks ago, Boyd looked at a four-year-old for sale at Phyllis Dawson, who's a friend of our show, Phyllis Dawson's Wind Chase Farm. He loved the horse, and when he left, he told Phyllis he was going to work on putting a syndicate together. Well, a few days later at a clinic in New York, Boyd mentioned to Bonnie, one of his owners, that he had found a really nice horse in Virginia. He started to put it all together, then the fire happened. And, of course, Bonnie lost her horse, Cagney, herself, in the fire, and it was one of the horses that Boyd rode. Bonnie contacted Phyllis Dawson, bought the horse for Boyd to ride, kept it a secret, drove up to his place in the dark, I think, on Sunday, with a horse trailer. Phyllis walks out of the horse trailer. He and Bonnie go, this is a present from Bonnie, and then hands him the horse and walks away. Total surprise.
Wow.
Is that not the coolest thing? This woman bought him a new horse to ride because her last one had been lost. Phyllis drives the horse over in the dark and says, this is from Bonnie. See you later. Hands him the horse. Like, oh, my gosh, that is so cool.
Didn't we have Phyllis on the show? Wasn't she on our show?
Yeah, we need to get her back on and talk to her about this. She's been on a couple times. And remember, she had that gray horse that, I mean, I fell in love with this horse. It was only like $60,000. But I wonder if that's the horse. We got to find out.
I don't know. We'll
got
to find
out.
We'll have to get Jennifer working on that.
Definitely, definitely. I have one more daily winning.
You do?
Yes.
Well, I wasn't prepared about that. Hold on.
Hit the button. This goes to all our Horses in the Morning listeners who are in my corner and behind me all the way, first to Susan Nelson. She just got a new job. She says she's very lucky, so she was going to donate. Run one request, and she says it's not a condition of the donation, but I don't buy it. She says that she donated, so Glenn, you have to quit making fun of Black Beauty. Everybody loves it.
Yeah, don't hold
Everybody
your breath,
loves
Susan.
It. Yeah, and then the other one goes to Robin, who just posted on her Facebook page. When I was a kid, I read Black Beauty probably 100 times, the big adult version. I started leasing a horse about 6 years ago and would go out every day on my lease, even if I wasn't going to ride, to pick his feet, because I learned from Black Beauty that the horse's feet hurt easily. See, it educates girls, Glenn. This is the best book of all time, greatest book of all time.
I hear you. So today, by the way, in this chapter you're going to be reading today, do we need Tom to get his pencil ready and start adding to the carnage count?
I don't think so. I think it's another happy chapter.
Okay, so we're carnage-free today?
We're currently at Squire Gordon's, and at Squire Gordon's is the best part of Black Beauty's life. So it's just all downhill from here, really. So enjoy the happy times.
Okay, I'll do that. Hey, couple, what other things? Oh, I was I was very excited. We got the press releases out today about Graceland. So, and we're going to be, you know, making our preparations for that. So that's pretty cool. I heard from Raphael, who's getting excited about coming over and seeing us there. And I'm trying to figure out if we can go meet Audrey Powell at some point, but he lives like 4 hours away from Graceland. He's not right next door. So he lives a little ways away. So
does
we'll
he
have
breed
to
breed Ivory Powell?
What's that?
Does he breed Ivory Powell?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
Oh, and it looks like Jamie, we're ready for our first guest. Why don't we go there? Because I know they're on limited time. Why don't you take this one?
All right. Well, it is an honor again to have Patty Reeves on. Of course, Patty and Dean are the owners of Mucho Macho Man, the Belmont contender. So good morning, Patty.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
We are doing good. Sorry about the phone thing here. It's going to be a little worse connection than normal simply because Skype is down, and that's how we usually do our show. But so if you can't understand us, just let us know. But how is Mucho Macho Man?
Well, he's doing great. I couldn't get within 3 feet of him yesterday at the barn. He was so wound up. He was trying to bite everybody that walked by. So he's feeling pretty good.
Oh my gosh, Dean. You couldn't even get close enough to give him a carrot or anything, huh?
I tried to even sit on a little bench fairly close to him, and he's just reaching as far as he could with his long neck trying to just bite everybody. So, and he was biting his ball that we had there, and so Kathy had to put him in timeout a couple of times.
Doesn't it make you wonder and how these grooms can walk in there, grab the horse, tack him up, do whatever they need to do? How skilled are your grooms?
You know, I'm glad you brought that up. Gilbert has been working with him ever since Kathy took over, and it's like a guy that has no fear. He just knows the horse so well, and the horse is so used to him, he just puts a hand up, sort of pushes him around, and then goes in there and does the work on his feet and everywhere else, whatever he's got to do. And I think Macho's just finally decided Gilbert's not going away, so he might as well just leave him alone.
That's truly amazing. So as far as preparations go, both of you, you know, you went to the Derby, you went to the Preakness. Talk about your preparation to go to the Belmont.
It was fairly, you know, we're starting to get where we understand this a little better. So it was a little easier, and we were just really trying to make sure the horse was ready to go. We do have a fair amount of family and friends that are coming up. We have these Triple Crown roadies is what we're calling them. And but it wasn't a tremendous amount of preparation because most of the work had been done, and the biggest thing was that we're not traveling because he's been here since after he left the Preakness. He's been here for 3 weeks. And so all we needed to do was just get to New York and all of the work that's involved with trying to either fly or van to a racetrack, we didn't have to go through all of that.
Hey, Dean, how are the new sneakers holding up? He has some new fancy shoes. And, of course, we've had shoe issues with him in the last couple of races here. So how confident are you that these are going to stay on and he won't be tearing one off out of the gate?
Well, we've spent a lot of time right after the Preakness. We had a meeting with I guess, the group that sort of helps me with everything. And we talked about a lot of items, everything from, you know, his future races to training to the shoes to the jockey to everything we thought we needed to look at. And, of course, most of the time was spent on the shoes to try to figure out what the issue was. And it's very difficult when you don't have a camera just watching his feet when he comes out of the gate. So we had several farriers come in and talked with them. And at the end of the day, Mr. Burns, I think it's Curtis Burns, has a Polyflex shoe that he fits on, and that shoe is what we decided to go with. A lot of the discussions we had with him, he seemed to be the one that felt like he knew possibly where the issues were. Not that anybody had done anything wrong. It was just the reach of the horse and the way he would come out of the gate and so forth. So we think that we've solved the problem. He's worked very well on these synthetic shoes. He's had them now about 2 weeks, and the breeze he had Sunday went very well on these shoes.
Well, we read about that, and at that point he had worked the fastest time, I think. So obviously he's feeling very good. And Patty, I want to ask you. I was looking at your Facebook page the other day, as I do, and you guys got some new horses, and you were posting the horses' names. Tell us about them.
Oh yeah, that's really a fun part of this. We got I wanted to kill Dean first of all because he went to the auction in Ocala this year, and he told me he was going to buy a new horse, and he came home with three of them.
Way to go, Dean.
he bought three new two-year-olds, and while I was shopping for Derby outfits and stressing that I didn't spend too much money, he went out and bought three new horses, so I didn't feel bad. But it turned out to be a lot of fun, and we got two of them are fillies, and one is a colt, and it's really hard to pick horses' names because first, you got to find one that's not taken, and it can only be, I think, 17 letters long. That's why some people string them together. And then you want to have some relevance to the mother and the father of the horse. So, you know, you try to we put out and we ask all of our friends and family and relatives to come up with some names, and then Dean and I sit there and kick our feet up and just kind of go through them and pick some names. But we came up with three that we really liked. The two fillies are Miss Swanee and Dixie Darling, and the colt is named Arthur.
You mean Arthur has never been taken?
I know, isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised.
Wow.
Now, and there's Miss... Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, you go ahead. You were going to ask me?
Well, I understand the Dixie Darling and Miss Swanee because I, too, am from Atlanta, and I love those names, being a little bit Southern, and obviously Swanee's just outside of Atlanta, and you got Dixie Darling. But then I thought, Arthur, where did that come from?
Well, that's a neat story, too. Well, the sire's name is Artie Schiller. So that was a really tough one because what do you do with the father's name being Artie Schiller? We just couldn't, you know, we were knocking our heads just trying to think of something. But as it turned out, there's a dear family friend of ours whose last name is Arthur that are from the Turks and Caicos Islands, which is a place that's been near and dear to our heart for many years. And when Dean started traveling to the Turks and Caicos Islands a long time ago, one of the first people he met there was a native man whose name is Dolphus Arthur. And Dean and Dolphus got to be best of friends, still are. And, in fact, Dolphus's son, Richie, even came to live with them many, many years ago while he was in school getting his pilot's license. So Richie Arthur has become like another son to Dean. And so when we were looking for a name that had something to do with Artie Schiller, the name Arthur just seemed to be a way to honor the sire as well as honor the Arthur family from the Turks and Caicos Islands.
That's great. I was so like, there's got to be a story associated with, you know, naming the horse Arthur. And we mentioned you guys being from Atlanta and being from Georgia and your Southern heritage, which, you know, I'm very proud of as well. You guys are becoming a little bit of poster children for horse racing in Georgia. As long as I can remember growing up, some people had bumper stickers on their car with, like, make horse racing legal in Georgia, support Georgia horse racing, those kind of things. And you guys are pretty much right on the front lines of supporting that and making it, trying to get it legalized in Georgia. How important is that to you? And what's the kind of the experiences that you guys have had because of 3M?
Well, it is something that's important to us, I think, for the whole state. You know, we mentioned the fact that, you know, we keep our horses in the wintertime in Florida, and then they ship right through Georgia, and they go to Kentucky, and they go to New York, and they go to New Jersey to race. And they come right through the state of Georgia, and they never even stop, and the state doesn't make a dime on us. And if parimutuel wagering was legal in the state of Georgia, you know, there would be racing, not just racing, but, you know, a breeder's fund, which would encourage breeders to foal their babies in Georgia. And it would bring a lot of jobs. It would bring a lot of revenue to the state. And, you know, we need that in the state. And I think we're just missing out on a lot. So, yeah, we have sort of become the poster child. There's a group called the Georgia Equine Education Project, who we've become a part of, and they've asked us to work with them, and we're helping to try to educate people, you know, to let them know, you know, all about the industry. There's just a lot more to it than what you might see in the movies.
Well, yeah, and you know what? I said this before. Last time Jennifer and I drove through Georgia to get to Florida, we were shocked at the number of billboards for adult businesses in Georgia, and yet you can't have horse racing. Just didn't make any sense at all to us. I wanted to ask you the important question of the day, Patty. What do people wear for the Belmont?
You know, I don't know. I'm going to have to, you know, be kind of watching myself. I've never been to the Belmont before. I've been to Belmont Park, but never to the Belmont Stakes. So I'm not sure if, you know, it's funny. Everyone's asking me because for the Kentucky Derby, everyone knew that roses was the flower. And then for the Preakness, everyone knew it was the Black-Eyed Susan. So a lot of people wore black and yellow and hats, of course. And for the Belmont, I believe that the flower is a white carnation. So I'm not sure if white's the color. And I need to ask some of the people once I get out and about here. I just got in last night. So I'm not really sure if hats are as big. I don't have one. I'm out of hats, but I have 3 days to shop.
Well, are you in New York right now?
Yeah, we're in New York. I got in last night. Dean got in Sunday. We're near Belmont Park on Long Island. And today at noon, we're going into Manhattan for the media luncheon, which is at Rockefeller Center.
Well, how cool is that?
Well, good Lord, woman, you are in the coolest place. You're in the best shopping district in the world. You're going to Manhattan. So,
right.
Dean, my friend, bring your credit card.
I think Patty's going to try to make up for all those horses I bought and spend a couple of days shopping in Manhattan.
Oh,
I say,
gosh,
Dean, that you have the addiction now. You're officially addicted. You buy three at once. That crosses the line, Dean. You're in it.
No, you're exactly right, and I have a lot of good reasons as to why we bought three.
What's that?
Do tell.
Well, Patty wanted to know what the good reasons are, so I'll have to get back to you on that.
Thank you, guys. We really appreciate you coming on again. It's been so much fun to follow your journey here, and I hope that we can continue to keep up with you over the next year before you have your next horse in the Kentucky Derby.
That would be great. We've really enjoyed it. I think Patty's gotten a real kick out of this, and it's meant a lot to her. You've been great to have put us and Mucho Macho Man out there to all your listeners and fans, and so we really do appreciate it and would love for y'all to stick with us on this ride as it continues.
We will, for sure.
No.
Thank you
both,
and good luck this week.
Thank you so much. All right, guys.
Bye-bye.
Have fun in Manhattan, girl. It goes crazy.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
They're so nice.
Oh, my gosh. I just love them. I do. I just love them so much.
They just, you know, what? After you're done talking to them, you just get the impression of there's a couple of people who are just enjoying the hell out of life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're just having fun. They've worked hard their entire lives to get to where they are now. And Dean's just saying, this is what I'm going to do. I'm just going to have some fun in life now. And Patty's just along for the ride. It's just so cool.
I think it's awesome. I do. I think what I think is really funny is that I ask the hard-hitting racing questions and you ask Patty what she's going to wear.
No. Well, I was waiting for you to ask, but then you didn't ask. So I was like, okay, I'll ask.
Yeah, I was going to get to it, but I was kind of waiting on you to ask that one. So that's kind of
I asked an intelligent question about shoes.
You did. I'm very proud of you. You were so horsey and racing savvy and talking about the horse racing in Georgia. You were fantastic. Good job, Glenn.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. I'll bow now. And then, you know, what was this race called this weekend? I've forgotten. Oh, no, that's okay. I think I got it.
Yeah.
Why don't you talk about our sponsor this hour?
Half horse, half man, so you don't care. All right, and to let you know, our sponsor, Boomer, Boomer's underneath my computer trying to pull cords out of the wall, so hold on. thank you so much, of course, to Pfizer for being our sponsor for today. At Pfizer Animal Health, they're passionate about the health and wellness of horses and all animals. Their expanded equine product portfolio includes the trusted Strongid C2X, West Nile Innovator, the Innovate family of vaccines, Solitude IGR, and Zylexis. Pfizer strives to make life better for horses and the people who care for them. Protect your horse against upper respiratory disease such as equine influenza virus, equine herpes virus, strands 1 and 4. From the Ford Dodge vaccine line, Pfizer Animal Health offers FluVac Innovator, adjuvanted with Medistim technology for an improved immune response. For more information on Pfizer Animal Health's product, visit PfizerAnimalHealth.com. That is PfizerAnimalHealth.com.
Well, thank you to Pfizer. We appreciate them being part of the show. As always on Tuesday.
Are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Well, I guess we kind of, I think we lost Glenn. So we're going to have our next guests on the line, and it's going to be Tamara Scoggins to talk a little bit about horse racing in Tibet. So let's go ahead and talk to Tamara. Let me find her here on the board. Well, good morning to you.
Good morning, or Kashi Dele, as they would say in Tibet. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. I think, actually, Jamie's having a problem right now. Can you hear me, Tamar?
I can.
All right. Well, let me just tell the story. We met over at the steeplechase the other day, and you know, it was fascinating. You said you're an anthropologist, and then we got talking for a little bit, and then you started talking about horse racing, and in Tibet, of all places. Now, I got to ask you how you go from anthropology to horse racing in Tibet. How do you get there?
You get there by first having, in my case, a very deep and genuine love of Tibetan culture. I started going to Tibet my junior year in college as an anthropology major, and I just fell in love with the place. And I also had a personal background in horses growing up in Colorado. And when it came time to pursue a PhD, because I love anthropology so much, and I love teaching, and I love Tibet and horses, well, you do the math, I put them together. And it just so happens that Tibet has an incredibly deep history and ongoing tradition of horse racing.
Oh,
but not the
okay.
type of horse racing you see here in Kentucky.
All right, so what type of horse racing do they do in Tibet?
Well, I first want to start off by saying that there are some dirt tracks in Tibet, but those have been constructed by more Chinese interests than local Tibetan interests. The circular racetrack, as we see here in North America, dirt, turf, otherwise, is not indigenous to Tibet. What they raced on was something more like our quarter horse races down the flat streets of early America, except Tibetans have been, their quarter horse races are across the grasslands of Tibet, both in the high plateau and in the eastern grasslands. And,
so I'm not picturing starting gates.
No starting gates. And I'll tell you, having been to these festivals, the starting line is quite a rambunctious place to be. It's literally, you know, people on the sidelines spilling over the grandstand, and just the horses totally amped up. And I've seen horses crash into the people just in droves around the grounds there.
So it's pretty wild.
It's so wild and colorful, and, you know, they do races, traditional, just straight races, but a lot of it is very acrobatic, too, and showing off, and all the riders are men, so I'm sure there's some masculine stuff involved there, too. So it's all, you know, a lot of pageantry and also tradition, like I've said.
What kind of, now, let's tell everybody like me who is not a geography major, where exactly is Tibet?
Tibet is right above Nepal, of the Himalayan mountain range. It is also a part of that. Right above India, it's where India continent and the Tibetan plateau plate collide and create the Himalayas. And just north of there is where Tibet is. And then if you move, east, you're getting into mainland China, but you're also at the source of the three major rivers of China and Southeast Asia there that come off the mountain glaciers of Tibet.
Okay.
So it's an incredible, extraordinary landscape. Mm-hmm.
It sounds beautiful.
Oh, it's so diverse, too. People always think of it as high and dry, desert plateau, but where the festivals I'm most interested are these grasslands are lush, and the mountains are, it's just breathtaking.
It's interesting because we think of, you have your doctorate, right?
I am currently working toward it.
Okay.
I'm ABD in scholarly terms.
Okay, so you're soon to be doctor.
Sure.
And you're an anthropologist, and we always think about anthropologists, I always think, and this is where I'm probably wrong, think about anthropologists studying things that are really old. And here you are studying something that's currently going on, but dates back a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, anthropology is actually a four-field tradition. I am a cultural anthropologist, so I study contemporary culture, but I always tell people it's like taking the study of human society and putting it in historical perspective. So that's cultural anthropology, contemporary culture. And then there's archaeology, which is the study of old stuff. That's what people usually think of us as, Indiana Jones and the whole deal. And then we are also, we have biological anthropology, which is anywhere from studying primate behavior as a model for human evolutionary behavior or disease and medicine in humans. And then lastly is linguistics, which is the study of human language and how we can trace cultural sharing and history through that.
Got it. Okay. So you're not the kind that's down like Indiana Jones in the caves getting poisonous spheres shot at you.
I have done everything except the poisonous spears.
So, no, Glenn,
I'm a well-rounded anthropologist.
When I think of anthropology, I think of the store at the mall that has fabulous clothes.
Oh, love that store.
Isn't it great?
Don't get me started on that.
I love that. So yeah. So Glenn, yeah, she's not, having giant, rolling, what are those, the giant rolling ball chasing her down the tunnel while she's got the Holy Grail in her hand or anything like that.
Although, if she could go out and find the Holy Grail, I bet you would.
Oh, wow. I'll make that my next research subject. Right now I'm trying to find the Holy Grail of the horse.
So tell us, how many times have you been to Tibet?
A couple times. I had big plans to actually live over there and do my research for a year or more, politically things got really dicey, and I don't, in the lead up to the Olympics and so forth, and believe it or not, horse festivals comes into that one too in terms of how Tibet really erupted politically, and it just shut down research opportunities, and it's really changing the face of the Tibet that I wanted to study there. So when I went previously, starting in 1999, I just feel so lucky that I got to see it in a time when it was opening, and then it just slammed shut after the Olympics. So, but I do totally plan to go back. I have friends who still go back, and Tibetan friends over there that I want to see again, and so forth. So it's still there.
What kind of horses do they ride mostly?
I am so fat. The horse culture of Tibet, so I work in the Mary Littauer collections at the International Museum of the Horse, and I am exposed to the study of horse culture around the world is amazing, but Tibet is such a blank spot, I feel, on the map for that. And I'm trying to find it in all these other readings that I do, but one of my questions is about the genetic, you know, meat and potatoes of the Tibetan horse. But for the most part, people say they're Mongolian pony extract, you know, those hardy Himalayan horses. They have to be developed for the high altitude. And, you know, then there's just Tibet's so close to Central Asia, which is in the, you know, the Persian, the Arabians, you know, that kind of bloodstock. And so the horses can be anywhere from scraggly ponies to really good-looking, gorgeous creatures. Especially when they're decked out in their racing finest.
And so I assume they're not very big. I assume they're in the 14 to 16 hand range?
Exactly. Definitely. And they are gated horses. They walk out really nicely and take out pretty fast. And they're able to withstand these men, these grown men, just flopping over their backs and over their sides and swooping up katas and shooting arrows and rifles at targets. So they are hardy, hardy little horses.
I can just picture it. So, do you hope now to your doctorate is going to be in Tibetan culture? Is that what your doctorate is going to be in?
Here's where the plot twist comes. That was the original plan, but as I mentioned previously, when, you know, Tibet went up in protest in 2008, that actually started a year before at a festival that I was going to study. A nomadic chief got up on stage and, you know, called for the return of the Dalai Lama, and that's just big no-no in Tibet. Got arrested. No one knows where he is. He got convicted for 8 years. Not to go into all of that, but, you know, I saw that when I went to these festivals, yes, I loved them for, you know, the horsey little girl in me, but I also thought they were fascinating because having studied Tibet for so long, seeing these gatherings in the kind of geopolitical climate and cultural climate, I knew that they, you know, all these Tibetans coming together, something was going to happen. And so then the next year it did, and then everything shut down from there. So that research, I still keep it ongoing, but as long as I cannot physically go back to Tibet, you know, that's on the warm but back burner. So now here I am in a different grasslands region in the bluegrass of Kentucky, and I'm studying horse racing, but just in this particular context.
Oh, really? Wow. So you're studying us.
Yes, that's what I was telling you at the High Hope Steeplechase. I wasn't there just to have fun and tailgate.
She was with notepad in hand.
Notepad.
Well, if you were at High Hope studying us, what you saw was drinking, eating, and drinking. Oh, and there was a couple horse races, too.
and
how does that compare? How does that compare to Tibet, you know?
Two observations. One, throw in some open gambling, dancing and singing, the drinking and eating and drinking, and that's the same thing at Tibetan horse race festivals. I mean, the similarities are uncanny. People get decked out in their finest there, too. Just happens to be like chunks of turquoise and coral for women's dress. And two, people tailgate with their cars, or some folks had tents up, but, you know, you pop open the hatchback in your car, and there's your awning. In Tibet, they bring out these gorgeous ceremonial tents, but people also show up in their trucks full of, beds and altars and wood stoves, because people set up temporary shops. So, you know, there's tons of similarities there, but also just so different and rich at the same time.
You know what? I see High Hope next year, Jamie. We're going to have to talk to the people that organize High Hope, and we're going to have to make sure that there's gambling and singing and dancing in addition to the drinking and horse racing.
Glenn, I bet there is. You just have to be at the right tailgate.
Well, if you see the Tibetan festival here, we know what's going on there.
Well, thank you, Tamar. We appreciate you being on with us and enlightening us a little bit to a place that I'm sure none of us have even thought about.
Oh, well, thank you for the opportunity.
Well, we appreciate it. Thank you so much. And do you have a website or anything or not at this
point? I sure do. I mean, you can nowadays I just say the easiest way is just to search my first and last name, Tamar, Tamar Scoggin, Scoggin. If you misspell it at A or an S there, it'll still come up. And then from there, you'll see that all my anthropological research, but I'm also a documentary filmmaker, and so you can see the film that I'm working on right now, which has nothing to do about horses or Tibet or Kentucky. So
okay.
That would be the best way. Or my first and last name at yahoo.com for email. So I welcome any and all inquiries.
All right. Well, thank you, Tamara. We appreciate you being on with us.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you.
Well, there you go. There's a place that you won't have on your visit list, apparently, anytime soon, because you're not allowed to go there.
Not going to go there anytime soon, I guess, but, man, that would be cool. That would be way cool.
It would be interesting to see, that's for sure. Well, our song today is brought to you by FeedXL. Guess what, Jamie? They have a brand-new website, just went up yesterday. So if it wasn't easy enough to figure out if you're feeding your horses correctly 2 days ago, it's even easier now. Just go to FeedXL.com. They have so much good information on there, just general information about nutrition and health and feeding your horses. But now, you know, when you go in and when you sign up for their program and you put all the personal information in about your horse and about what you're feeding your horse, it's even easier and the reports are more extensive than they were before. You're going to get charts and graphs, and it's going to tell you, are you feeding too much vitamin A or too much vitamin C, too much grain, too much hay, not enough of this. Maybe maybe you should feed a little bit more in an area. You're going to know that you're feeding your horses correctly after you're done with FeedXL. Just go to FeedXL.com, take a couple minutes to put in the information, and what you get out, it's going to be well worth it, and you're going to go back every 3 months to update it to make sure that you're continuing to do right by your horses at FeedXL.com. You know, Jamie, I thought for a song today, I thought hard about what we were going to do. And last night, there were a few guys on the show, but it was mostly females, as is the case in our world. And it was all girls talking about their horses. So I think Templeton would be happy today if we played a little Girls and Horses.
She talks about them, dreams about them, thinks about them all the time. She's got to have them, be lost without them. You can see it in her eyes. What is it? What is it with girls and horses? Now when I was a young girl, they were my whole world. They were my one safe place. Now that I'm older, still lean on their shoulders, I still feel like that girl someday. What is it? What is it with girls? What is it with girls and horses?
is Templeton Thompson, Girls and Horses. Gosh, I love that song. I love it, love it, love it. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network. I'm Jamie Jennings with Glenn the Geek. Jennifer's producing. And today's show is brought to you by Pfizer Animal Health. And Glenn, it is that time again, my friend. I know you're excited.
I am so excited. I'm not even sitting on my ball today. I just thought about that. I guess I was so tired I forgot to get my ball out today.
Well, hit the button, my friend.
Oh, okay.
This is a dramatic reading by Jamie Jennings of the English classic Black Beauty by Anna Sewell.
Chapter 5, A Fair Start. The name of the coachman was John Manley. He had a wife and one little child, and they lived in the coachman's cottage very near the stables. The next morning, he took me into the yard and gave me a good grooming, and just as I was going into my box with my coat soft and bright, the squire came in to look at me and seemed pleased. "John," he said, "I meant to have tried the new horse this morning, but I have other business. You may as well take him around after breakfast, go by the common in the Highwood, and back by the watermill in the river. That will show his paces." "I will, sir," said John. After breakfast, he came by and fitted me with a bridle. He was very particular in letting out and taking in the straps to fit my head comfortably. Then he brought the saddle. That was not broad enough for my back. He saw it in a minute and went for another, which fitted nicely. He first rode me slowly, then a trot, then a canter, and when we were on the common, he gave me a light touch with his whip, and we had a splendid gallop. "Ho, ho, my boy," he said as he pulled me up. "You would like to follow the hounds, I think." As we came back through the park, we met Squire and Mrs. Gordon walking. They stopped, and John jumped off. "Well, John, how does he go?" "First rate, sir," answered John. "He is fleet as a deer. He has a fine spirit, too, but with the lightest touch of the rein will guide him." Down the end of the common, we met one of those traveling carts hung all over with baskets, rugs, and such like. You know, sir, many horses will not pass those carts quietly. He just took a good look at it and then went on as quiet and pleasant as could be. They were shooting rabbits near the Highwood, and a gun went off close by. He pulled up a little and looked, but did not stir a step right or left. I just held the rein steady and did not hurry him, and it's my opinion that he has not been frightened or ill-used while he was young. "That's well," said the squire. "I will try him myself tomorrow." The next day I was brought up for my master. I remembered my mother's counsel and my good old master's, and I tried to do exactly what he wanted me to do. I found he was a very good rider and thoughtful for his horse, too. When we came home, the lady was at the hall door as he rode up. "Well, my dear," she said, "how do you like him?" "He is exactly what John said," he replied. "A pleasanter creature I never wished to mount. What shall we call him?" "Would you like Ebony?" she said. "He is as black as Ebony." "No, not Ebony." "Will you call him Blackbird, like your uncle's old horse?" "No, he is far handsomer than old Blackbird ever was." "Yes," she said, "he is really quite a beauty, and he has such a sweet, good-tempered face and such a fine, intelligent eye. What do you say to calling him Black Beauty?" "Black Beauty? Why, yes, I think that should be a very good name. If you like it, it shall be his name," and so it was. When John went into the stable, he told James that Miss Master and Mistress had chosen a good, sensible English name for me that meant something, not like Marengo or Pegasus or Abdallah. They both laughed, and James said, "If it was not for bringing back the past, I should have named him Rob Roy, for I never saw two horses more alike." "That's no wonder," said John. "Didn't you know that Farmer Gray's old Duchess was the mother of them both?" "I had never heard that before, and so poor Rob Roy, who was killed at the hunt, was my brother. I did not wonder that my mother was so troubled. It seems that horses have no relations, at least they never know each other after they are sold." John seemed very proud of me. He used to make my mane and tail almost as smooth as a lady's hair, and he would talk to me a great deal. Of course, I did not understand all he said, but I learned more and more to know what he meant and what he wanted me to do. I grew very fond of him. He was so gentle and kind, and he seemed to know just how a horse feels. When he cleaned me, he knew my very tender places and the ticklish places, and when he brushed my head, he would carefully went over my eyes as they were his own and never stirred up any ill temper. James Howard, the stable boy, was just as gentle and pleasant in his way, so I thought myself very well off. There was another man who helped me in the yard, but he had very little to do with Ginger and me. And that is the first half of Chapter 5, A Fair Start. We will finish that and Chapter 6 tomorrow
Thank you very much.
And that concludes the daily dramatic reading of Black Beauty.
Oh, that just makes me happy reading that book. It just makes me smile.
Okay, see, I can't make any more comments now ever again about Black Beauty because apparently the entire listening audience is against me on this one. Except for my wife, who's over there probably sleeping at this very moment.
I don't
gotta
even
admit,
understand
I think I dozed off a little bit and was really tired today, and that music going in the background kind of.
Oh boy, you're just a pain.
I'm a guy.
Just a pain.
I'm a guy. What can I say? I'm a guy.
We're educating you. But do you understand, like, when we read that book and they talk about, you know, how he gently goes over the horse's eyes with the brush and he watches out for the ticklish spots and how they take care of him. It really, as a woman and as a little girl reading the book, it really shaped the way that I treat my horse. I really think that after reading that book, I thought a lot more about what my horse thought of me. You know, it's like almost like if we were to talk to a horse psychic, I would want, you know, the horse to tell her things like Black Beauty said. You know, I really don't like it when she kind of brushes under my flanks a little too hard and it kind of hurts. It's sort of uncomfortable. And then, you know, I like the way that she gently goes over my eyes and ears with the soft rag. You know, I can totally hear my horse talking to me like that.
Well, and apparently Susan Nelson agrees. She says, thank you, Glenn. So you're welcome, Susan. Didn't pick on her today. I'll leave her alone for a couple days. But I will pick on her again when it goes back to Death and Carnage. Then Tom and I will be back in business.
Yeah, that's going to happen. So, enjoy the happy days at Birtwick Park.
Tom, get ready. I think by the end of next week, you're going to have more statistics to do. You know, it is going to be interesting to see what Tom comes up with over the course of the whole book, how many do die and, you know, what all the carnage is.
And, of course, we're talking about Tom, our listener, who is keeping a body count, he said. So, nice.
You know, I actually was totally unprepared for today's show. I have no news to even talk about. I have nothing.
You don't have nothing?
I
wanted to replay a couple of the interviews from last night because I think that a lot of people couldn't tune in to that one, but they may go back and listen to the uploaded show. But to hear some of the stories that people were talking about last night in Horse World Gives Back, I mean, we had a woman talk about bringing her dog, who's a search and rescue dog, and turning him loose and the passion that this dog has for finding, you know, people that are in trouble. And the way that she describes, like, the training, I had no idea. The dog separates the scents of people that are with him and searches for any unknown human scent. How do you train a dog to do that? It's just amazing.
I know, and I'll tell you, too, the veterinarian is the one that sort of got me. You were interviewing her from North Carolina, you know, just going out and, you know, she was out there after the tornado just stopping at people's farms. She was finding horses in the woods. I mean, she just, she was so kind of matter of fact about it.
Yeah. She told the story like she was going on a hike, you know, because they pulled their trucks up there. They couldn't drive all the way to the farm. And she's telling the story like she's just going for a little walk in the woods. Of course, she's on a mission, but just so matter-of-factly, like, she's like, and then I came across this beautiful bay horse that had rebar sticking out of its humerus. And she, like, removed, did, like, emergency surgery on this horse. Then she comes across another horse, three broken legs. And it was like this path of carnage that she kept walking and finding another horse and walking and finding another horse and another horse. And so many of them did not have, a good ending in the sense that many of them lost their lives, but they didn't suffer because she was the one to walk along and find them. And she had the ability to, you know, euthanize them and they weren't laying there in mess, and that's definitely the interview that made me extremely emotional, because just to hear that kind of story and just imagine that can happen to anybody. And the other thing was the lack of preparation. You know, everybody we talk to, we ask them, do you have a plan? Did you have a plan? And even, you know, a lot of the people that just came on to talk to us, not even that were in the tornadoes, nobody has a plan. So that just goes to show you how important it is to institute an emergency disaster plan.
I think there was one exception to that, and that was the boys' home. When the gentleman was on talking about the boys' home, mm-hmm. it's 37 people in a basement. And they did have a plan. They knew where they were going to go, and they knew what they were going to do. And then remember the first lady, too. I think the ones that are really in Tornado Alley had a plan, you know. And the first lady, remember the first one we talked to, they went to the neighbor's basement, and they would have died had they not.
Yeah.
And they got there just in time. And so, you know, but then we ended up talking to some very famous riders, people calling in, and they still to this day don't have a plan. So I think that what came out of that the most is be prepared. Get prepared, you know, have a plan in place for what you're going to do, because you only have, in many cases, you're going to have 10, 15 minutes to get it done.
Right.
And you don't have time to make a plan in 10 or 15 minutes.
Yeah, and I think Karen O'Connor, being on our show last night, said it best. You know, it's definitely difficult for the people, but the poor horses don't know what's going on. They don't even have, you know, they don't have weather radios. They don't have the newscasters saying, hey, there's a tornado coming. They just experience this thing, and, you know, I'm sure that none of them are ever going to be the same, and it's just very sad, but, you know, thank God so many of them were saved. And please, everybody, do try to figure out the best plan for you.
And I want to remind everybody that today's shopping day. It's Horse World Gives Back Retail Day. And while you were doing your dramatic reading of Black Beauty, Jennifer typed over to me, not sleeping, I'm shopping. So, see, there you go.
Jennifer, you're supposed to pay attention. You haven't read the book. That is why we are reading it. For you, too, because you never read it. I'm telling you, it's going to change your life if you just actually suck it up and listen. so, yes, it is retail day. Everybody go shopping. Go to horseworldgivesback.com and click on retailers. And then you can link to their websites and do some online shopping.
I want to interrupt you here because I know we have Katie Gilmore on the line, and she is from Horse and Country TV, and she gives us our European report from England. And I want to ask Katie right now, have you ever read Black Beauty?
I've seen the film, but
No, wait a minute. Have you ever read Black Beauty?
I've tried to.
She's on my side.
I tried as a child, pretty much. I tried to read it and got too upset, so my mom took it away from me.
See, it is wrong for children to read Black Beauty. That's what I've been saying since the beginning of this.
It's a great story, but it's tough on young minds, really.
I agree.
And,
it's tough on my mind, too.
There's no younger mind right now than Glenn, so.
All right, Jamie, I'm sorry. I'll shut up now.
Yeah, you're not allowed to, Susan Nelson said you're not allowed. So Katie, you can tune in every day. You just have to read the first 4 or 5 chapters and get caught up, and we'll continue every day reading a chapter. So make sure you're here and you're listening every single
I will
day.
Do.
So
I think
get the...
I can probably take it now I'm a bit older.
Yeah, I think you'd be okay. So what is happening over there in Europe? I know you've got some news for us. And first of all, thank you so much for joining us, Katie. We really appreciate it. But there was a famous horse that won their debut competition. Tell us about that.
That's right, yeah. So literally from one Black Beauty to another, Totolas,
mm-hmm.
the fantastic Wonder Stallion that was ridden by Edward Gal, was sold to Paul Chocomal last year, and Matthias Alexander Rath now has the ride on him. We've been waiting with bated breath to see their competition debut. A lot of Totolas and Edward Gal fans were kind of ready to really dismiss them having been quite upset about the stallion being sold. But they took part at the CDI in Munich on the 2nd of June and won it by a country mile. They were the only combination to score over 70%. They scored 76.787%, which was 7.55% higher than their nearest rival. So, you know, you do start wondering, is there anyone that can beat this stallion? He is fantastic.
So, in your opinion, see what?
We've got some video of the test, actually, on our website, so you can actually watch the test with Matthias Rath and Tote Lass, so you can see the daily competition. There's also an interview with Matthias Rath after the competition that we've published as well, in which there's quite a funny question. The interviewer asks him whether he would accept €2 million from someone to have a sit on Tote Lass, and I'll let you watch the video to find out what his answer was.
See, I was going to ask you, you said, can anybody beat this stallion? And I would say, you know, can he win everything, like, say, if you were riding him or if I was riding him? Or is it just these awesome, amazing Grand Prix riders that are sitting on him that make it happen? Or is it just the horse?
I think the horse is naturally very talented. His gymnastic ability is fabulous. I mean, you know, he is what breeding has been trying to achieve for years, and he is built so well for the job, and he does it so easily. And yet, you know, you see in the Grand Prix competitions, you see other horses that are performing very well, and as soon as the rider drops the reins and the crowd cheers or claps, they go mad. With Tote Lass, I've seen him in the flesh several times, and with Tote Lass, with both Matthias Rath and Edward Gale, they'd finish their test, their rein would be on the buckle, the crowd would be cheering, stamping the works, and Tote Lass just sort of walks out all relaxed, as if to say, oh yeah, I deserve that, I'm clever.
And then you've got, you know, regular dressage horses that a piece of paper flutters across the ground and they lose their mind, my horse included. So that's just amazing, amazing. Well, we wish them the best of luck. You know, I know a lot of people were pretty mad about the whole thing, but seems like at least, you know, the stallion is in good hands. Now, I have a question for you, too, because I've been hearing a little bit about this, and I don't even know what it is. So I know that there's a competition in express eventing. What is express eventing, and what is this competition all about?
Express eventing is pretty much written on the tin. It is eventing in a compact format. So there's dressage to music, a little bit of cross-country, and some show jumping, but it all takes place on one day. It's not been going for very long. I think it's only been going a couple of years. And previously, the riders have had to be invited to take part, but riders can now apply themselves. We just heard who's going to be competing at Bolesworth Castle, and actually the lineup of riders is fantastic. We've got Mark Todd there, who won badminton, obviously, and did very well at Kentucky. He's competing. Oliver Townend's competing. There's some fairly big names. So it's an interesting format. The dressage phase of eventing has changed to dressage to music. So it gives it, you know, a little bit more flair and excitement.
Now, do they get to pick
the
music?
Any more exciting.
Yes,
they get to pick their own music. Yeah, absolutely. And obviously be designing their own tests to that music. So rather than riding the same test, there's a little bit of creative expression in there as well.
Oh, that's really cool. I will definitely look forward to seeing that video online. I'm sure you guys are going to have it up afterwards again on Horse and Country TV. So definitely we'll be checking that out.
It's an interesting format. I think it's now that we're starting to see big names attracted to it, you know, it looks like it could fly.
Yeah, cool. So what else is happening? I know we have some news about Zara Phillips.
We do, yes. Zara Phillips was signed as an Olympic ambassador for 2012. She is the ambassador for Samsung. There's a little bit of a furor in the British press as to whether or not she should do that, given her royal blood. But I think, you know, she's a professional rider in her own right, and she's got to run her own horses. But what we have as part of this article on horseandcountry.tv is a video of Zara, and she's actually talking and explaining about how she intends to build enthusiasm for the Olympics, and also about her own Olympic plans and, you know, the horses that she has that she hopes will make the team.
Yeah, cool. And I know you guys are at horseandcountry.tv. You got a lot of blogs that are going on. Tell us about this blog of the week.
Okay, well, our blog of the week this week comes from a lady called Angela Crane. She runs Hold and Fold Stud in the UK, and she's also a Grand Prix dressage rider herself. She stands a stallion called Moyman, who's by Fleming, which is a beautiful, beautiful KWPN stallion. And she, her books are brilliant because she doesn't just write about dressage or just about breeding. There's a little bit of everything to do with the horse world in there. But this one in particular, this week, she is sharing an amazing story about a foal that was born called Grace, who fell victim to enteritis, which is a really serious condition that usually can mean death for a young foal. You can read about Grace's struggle in Angela's blog, but you do need to have your tissues because the story is fantastic and Angela tells it so well. And I won't tell you whether it's a good or a bad outcome, but it wasn't too traumatic and I came away from it with a smile on my face. That's all you need to know, really.
Okay.
But yeah, check out Angela's blogs. She has caused a fair amount of controversy with some of the comments she makes about breeding, you know, and a lot of debate, which is exactly what we want to do with the blogs on horseandcountry.tv. So have a look.
Definitely will. Definitely. It's amazing that a breeder would put herself out there like that, causing controversy, but good for her. So what else is going on?
Well, on HRTV, you can watch Horse and Country TV in the States so that you're able to watch our shows there too. We are showing two programs this week on HRTV. One is a film called The Plight of the Dartmoor Pony. Dartmoor ponies are a native breed to Britain, very cute, usually about 12 hands high. And they've been, well, as the title suggests, there's been the plight of the Dartmoor pony. There's been some problems out there on Dartmoor with the ponies and the problems that they face. It's a really great documentary and it's beautifully shot, so that's worth watching. And we've also got highlights from Badminton 2010 to watch as we build up to showing you guys all the action from this year. So you can find out what to watch when by going to their website at hrtv.com/calendar, so you can have a look at their schedule, or you can watch HRTV shows on the HRTV website by subscribing to hrtvlive.com.
Yeah, it's definitely worth it, and it just stinks that it's not on our regular TVs, because I would set my my DVR and just record the whole channel all the time, I think. But you can just go on horseandcountry.tv and HRTV and definitely send them a letter and say, hey, put this on TV. We want to see it.
Hey,
now,
Katie, can I add here, jump in quick? I got to say that the Dartmoor ponies, I are so darn cute. There's some really cute Dartmoor. And I'm a pony guy, so... But there are some really
cute. Aren't they? They're really cute. And I've spent quite a lot of time on Dartmoor myself, down in Devon. And the ponies are wild there. They're owned. They're all owned by someone, but they live feral on the moor. And it's so sweet, especially if you go around this time of year when there's lots of foals on the ground. It's just fantastic. And you're just, you know, just wandering around, finding their own business, really.
I think the only time I think the only thing that we really have like it other than the Mustangs in the pony variety is Chincoteague. On Chincoteague Island, there's some wild ponies out there. I know my wife and I went to see them the one time, and we couldn't get anywhere near them because they were all hiding in the woods that day. It was so darn hot, and the bugs were so bad that as soon as you entered the woods, you got eaten alive, and we couldn't figure out how the ponies stayed in there because the bugs were just so bad.
Oh,
wow.
I guess they had it pretty effective with their tails.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Well, this is great. We're so glad. I was just watching while you guys were talking. I was watching Totalist doing his thing. And let me tell you, that horse is so far beyond. I'm not a dressage expert. I'm a horse husband. But I've watched a lot of dressage. And that horse is just, when you watch him, he's just so far above everybody else. He's just
he's
stunning.
He's in a league of his own. And another thing that's really interesting about Totalus is he stood at stud for the first time last year. And this year is the first year we've had Totalus foals on the ground. And he looks like he stamps his progeny pretty well. Whether I would pay the €8,000 covering fee is another matter.
Oh my gosh.
But you know, this author's broken every record. He keeps breaking his own records.
Yes.
So, you know, and he's an amazing stallion, but
well,
I guess,
and I think
for
that
me,
answers the question that came up when he was sold, is can he do it with a new rider, and will he do it for a new rider? And I guess the answer is yes.
Yeah, I mean, there's still work to go on the partnership, I think. There was, if you watch the PF quite closely, he was so uphill, his hind legs were coming up before he could get his front legs down, and, you know, so the mark suffered a little bit there. I felt that Matthias Rath rode him a little bit more conservatively than Edward Gall did. But Edward Gall had the benefit of having had years and years of partnership with him. So, you know, they are definitely a combination to watch. And I have to say, I wouldn't like to be competing against them at any point soon.
Like at the Olympics next year?
Exactly. I mean, I think the other teams will be quaking in their boots looking at the German team.
Yeah, well, the German team has always been strong. Add this to it, and now look what you have. Well, this has been terrific. We appreciate it. It's good to have you back again, and we'll be back with you again next week. Oh, one other personal question. Did you get your house moved? You all in?
I'm all in. I moved. Yeah, absolutely. We've got every box unpacked. I even had time to go and watch my horse at her first young horse class today as well. So all very exciting.
Well,
how
good.
Do you do?
Good. Well, thank you, Katie. We appreciate you being with us, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, take care, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right.
Oh,
I don't know about you, Jamie, but let's let's wrap it up. So
okay,
tired.
Yeah, I'm going back to bed.
You can listen to all the shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com. There's some terrific shows that came out last week. If you only listen to this one, I encourage you to hop on over to horseradionetwork.com and take a listen to some of the other shows. All the other shows are on podcast form, so you can listen to them anytime you want. Download them to your iPhone, through iTunes. You can sign up through iTunes. You know, you can just listen to them on the website. Any way you want to do it, there's some fun shows to be had over there. You can also follow us on Twitter. We are at Horse Radio.
And we will be back tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Eastern. That's 6 a.m. Arizona time. Goodbye, everybody. Thank you so much for such a fantastic night last night and sticking with us through our technical difficulties today. Goodbye, and say goodbye, Glenn.
Remember, everybody, Friday morning live from Graceland and Elvis's barn. Have a great day and wear your helmets.